Yesterday on Morning Edition, we met a novelist who's written a new Sherlock Holmes mystery. Today, we have a real mystery involving the death of a Sherlock Holmes enthusiast. The Victorian detective's creator was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and in recent years, the foremost expert in Doyle's writings was Richard Llansillen Green. A New Yorker magazine writer, David Gran, traced Green's obsessions back to his childhood.
He created at the age of 13 a replica in his house of the office where Holmes and Watson heard their cases and solved their cases, and it just continued to grow. And by the time he had graduated from Oxford, he became the world's foremost expert both in Sherlock Holmes but also in Conan Doyle.
But in the midst of this process, well, you tell me the circumstances of his death.
Last spring, various papers pertaining to Conan Doyle, which Richard Green had been pursuing for years, turned up at auction at Christie's.
And why were they so important?
There were thousands of papers, and they were diary entries, letters from Conan Doyle to his mother and from his mother to Conan Doyle, letters from Doyle to his brother. And they had been all his private papers, which were in his study when he died. And not long after he died, they disappeared. And ever since then, scholars had been pursuing them.
Green is the guy who finally discovered where these papers were, thought he was going to get them out of Arthur Conan Doyle's daughter.
That's exactly right. For two decades, Richard had tried to investigate and locate these papers, and he finally was able to come what he believed was upon them from the daughter of Doyle, who had them in her possession. She had already written her will, which Richard had, and the will said she would donate these papers, which is why he was convinced they would go to the British Library.
So he thought there was foul play, and this deeply disturbed him.
Well, it deeply disturbed him for two reasons. One, he wasn't going to get access to them, and he had spent his life pursuing them so he could write the definitive Doyle biography. And he also believed, from just a pure ethical standpoint, that these papers were being stolen. And there had been a long history within the Doyle family of kind of legal disputes, of kind of double-crossing, of greed, of members trying to steal the papers from each other. So he had a lot of ground to be suspicious. And then he began a campaign to try to stop the sale of the papers. And it was during that campaign that he warned of threats to his life. And within weeks, he was found dead in his apartment, garroted.
Strangled.
Strangled with a cord, a shoelace. Now, the police assumed that he had committed suicide because there was no forced entry. But during the inquest, the coroner said there was not enough evidence to ascertain whether he had been murdered or committed suicide.
As you've laid out the facts of this unexplained death, let me be the last of thousands of people to say this sounds like a case for Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, and many of his friends who were part of the same subculture took up the case themselves and tried in their own kind of private way to try to solve this case.
Could you just lay out a couple of the suspects that you pursued?
Well, I'd be careful of referring anyone specifically as suspects.
Persons of interest, let us say.
Persons of interest, yes. One person initially was one of Richard's former lovers, but in evaluating the evidence, it was very clear that he really wasn't implicated. The other person was this kind of mysterious American that his friends would refer to, or who Richard had referred to and had said, there's this American who's trying to bring me down. Now, I was able to eventually meet the American, who happened to be a very high member, has a very high position in the Pentagon. And as it became clear in talking to the American and gathering the evidence, he really wasn't a suspect.
Everybody's going to want to know who this Pentagon official was, so we should just mention that he asked you not to reveal his name?
He asked me not to reveal his name for kind of obvious reasons, and because of the kind of work he does, he's very involved in clandestine operations. And all these things in the minds of Richard's friends and some of the Sherlockians had kind of built him up into kind of a Professor Moriarty, which was obviously the fictional character who was Sherlock Holmes's greatest rival.
You point out that the fictional character Sherlock Holmes had a history of madness in his family. Arthur Conan Doyle, the author who created him, according to some people, began to lose his grip on reality as he got a little bit older. And then we come to Richard Llansillen Green, a man who was obsessed with both Sherlock Holmes and Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yes, there are parallels in several ways. In Conan Doyle's case, he had grown very, very weary of writing the Sherlock Holmes stories. And even in the stories themselves, Sherlock Holmes often seems burdened by the task and shoots up his own form of drug concoction, the 7% solution, which is cocaine. And at a certain point, Doyle felt haunted by Sherlock Holmes. And finally, he decided he had to kill Sherlock Holmes. He couldn't take it anymore. And he wrote the story, The Final Problem, with Professor Moriarty, in which it appears, according to Watson, that he had in fact murdered Holmes, that the two of them had plunged off the cliff. And in his own diary, Doyle had wrote, killed Holmes with apparent delight. And he also later said that Holmes was dead and damned, and he seemed quite happy with that. There were also the actors who played Sherlock Holmes. Basil Rathbone became so identified with this character who he was demanded to play again and again, he felt like it was eclipsing all his other roles. And he finally wrote in his autobiography that he wished he too could kill Holmes. And Jeremy Brett, who had a nervous breakdown while playing Sherlock Holmes, while he was being carried off to a psychiatric ward, was said to have cried out, "Damn you, Holmes." So there was this kind of history, this kind of tension between both the rational, total mental perfection of Holmes alongside kind of an outbreak of irrationality, and even mental breakdown.
And Richard Green had that kind of breakdown?
There is no question that by the end of his life, especially the final week, Richard clearly showed signs that he seemed to be losing it, as one friend put it, that he had become despondent. And it was those signs and evidence that had led his one of his closest friends to finally posit the theory that he, in fact, did commit suicide in this somewhat bizarre manner in an attempt to make it look like actual murder.
Is there one clue that pointed you to that conclusion of suicide as opposed to murder?
Yes, the primary clue was a spoon, a wooden spoon, which was kind of inexplicably found on the bed where Richard was lying. And it appears that he probably used that to tighten the cord, and that would help explain why he was actually able to garrote himself, which is so difficult to do.
Elementary.
Elementary.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
David Gran is a reporter for The New Yorker magazine.